morning. This is Gail Sylvia, host of SylviaGlobal.com. And joining me today is Emily Bouchard. Emily is a family wealth and money coach. She's also the managing partner of Wealth Legacy Group, WLG, specializing in the emotional impact of wealth in people's lives. Emily has been working with high net worth families since 2004 with a specialty in step and blended family issues. She is also the author of the forthcoming, soon-to-be-released, it's coming up very soon, Estate Planning for the Blended Family. Emily, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I'm delighted. Thank you.
What an honor and a pleasure. You know, you are also have an MSSW, a Master's of Science in Social Work. Tell us the story about the connection between social work and wealth and money coaching and managing, you know, how the two go together. Often they're thought of as being at opposite ends of the financial spectrum, but somehow you have successfully integrated that, you know, your background with your current work.
That's a great question, and it was really surprising to me. And one of the things I love about this in terms of your listeners is how you get really clear on a passion or something that you really care deeply about, it is so surprising how it ends up showing up that you get to make a difference in the world. So my passion pretty consistently has been about communication around challenging, difficult issues in people's lives so that they can build stronger, tighter relationships that are really more fulfilling, as opposed to having the fear of conflict or the difficulty or the emotion around a topic blow them apart, which happens so often. And I started to just study everything I could about it. I have a degree in child development because I wanted to look at families from that perspective. And I worked, my social work degree was a focus on marital and family therapy. And I got that degree because it was the most universally accepted degree across the country if I moved from one place to another to do therapy. So that was the idea behind it. And it was really just, how do I make a difference in people's lives? And then I became a step-parent and started a group for step-parents, started a women's group as well, and started writing about what we were learning. And people started to find me. I started a company called blended-families.com in about 2003. And people found me through that. And I started out, my first clients were a group of women in Ghana, West Africa, who were raising children they hadn't given birth to because of the AIDS epidemic. And they were dealing with all kinds of really intricate, complex family dynamics. And they couldn't afford my services. And so I said, I'll be happy to work with you for free. It's such an important thing that you're doing. And so I was doing this work with them. And then I got contacted out of the blue from a company that worked with ultra-high net worth families, $25 million or more in assets, on the successful transfer of wealth from one generation to the other, because they'd heard about me. I was recommended really highly to them, and they thought that I could bring in my expertise when they had specific issues related to step or blended family dynamics. And it was really interesting because the man who ran the company said, "Why do you want to work with this population?" And I said, "You know, I'm not even sure if I do. I have to do some research and find out if it's a good fit." And he was kind of taken aback because a lot of people approach him wanting to work with that population and desiring to be close to the rich and famous. And I just treat people like people, and I wanted to see if I can make a difference in their lives. And I found that I was actually really suited to the work because I did treat people as human beings that had significant issues in their lives and that were in pain around how they were relating, and that I can help people with. So that's how I got into it, and then I just started to go from there in terms of, okay, I got to get trained in money and wealth. And so I took certification in money coaching, and I worked with financial planners to help me understand intricacies of what we were talking about. So that's how I got into it.
That's kind of interesting. My background also includes a degree in sociology and child development. And
wow.
How the fact that these women in Ghana reached out to you and how easily that's able to happen now because of just the technology available to us as well. And then also how we're able, you said something at the very beginning about taking a passion and, you know, how our passions can evolve into incredible opportunities that really can go beyond our wildest dreams in many ways, you know, that weren't even at the forefront of our thinking necessarily at one point along the journey. Talk about the Wealth Legacy Group then. You know, I know that you consult to clarify personal issues that surround money and wealth and provide guidance to resolve them. What are some of the examples of the personal issues associated with money and wealth?
Oh, thanks for asking that. We look at the emotional impact of wealth in people's lives. So some common issues that we deal with are people who have inherited wealth, who didn't have anything to do with how the money necessarily was made or the decisions around how it was getting transferred to them. And it's this extraordinary experience people have of receiving this tremendous bonus and gift in their lives and having quite a bit of emotion around it that they don't have any space to talk to anybody about because it's like, oh, I wish I had your problem. And it gets dismissed. And there can be shame and guilt and hurt and pain around it that they don't have any place to go to in it. And we provide a very safe, confidential container for people that are feeling a lot of challenges around it, you know, and especially if they weren't given a chance to be prepared for it and they suddenly are surprised by it, then they're supposed to be competent and they don't know even where to begin. And there's embarrassment around that, too, that we help people sort through.
How do you actually do it? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's a great question. We use a number of different tools and strategies as we work with people. We have something called a rich life portfolio that gives them a great foundation. So it's a step-by-step process where we look at the gems from their past in terms of what they got as a result of their family and the intangible assets that are also in their lives, not just these tangible ones that they were so impacted by. And then we look at what is it that they identify with, what's theirs, and what do they want to let go of that's hampering them and moving forward effectively. So we look at family patterns using something called a genogram, which is a really wonderful way to map out family systems and historical patterns. So, like, for instance, one woman we worked with, she had a lot of shame around the fact that she was divorced more than once. And when we did her genogram, she realized that it was actually a family pattern, and it went through generations. And suddenly she wasn't this exception that she should be ashamed of. I was like, oh, this is something that is actually quite common in our family. And it gave her a complete, you could just see her back to straighter, and she didn't get weighed down by that shame anymore. And it just shifted naturally as she started to see the family history in a different way. And then we look at the future. We look at what is it that somebody's passionate about and really help them tap into that and how they want to design and craft their future so that their wealth, their inheritance, that maybe it's a liquidity event and they've gone from being the head of a company to suddenly having sold it and having a lot of money and being a money manager, and they identified so strongly with the company that, well, who am I now? So we help people with that transition too.
Do you help to break patterns? For example, the lady that had the pattern of divorce, and was she able to break that cycle or just be able to feel relieved that it wasn't just a problem associated with herself and her own identity?
Yeah, it brought a lot more peace to her heart, and it shifted how she relates with her daughter. As her daughter is coming of age and looking at how she wants to be in relationships, because she's seen that that family pattern could easily be repeated for her as well. And so she's showing up differently about how she approaches relationships and working you know, with us coaching in terms of, wow, how do I shift this so I can start to feel that I can have and create a lasting, loving relationship in my life differently?
I think
what does that look like for me?
Yeah, what does it look like for her and in where she is now and being able not to, you know, being able to avoid some of the pitfalls emotionally as well that come
right.
with wealth. I think you were getting ready to give another example after the one of, you know, selling a company and then becoming a wealth, you know, a money manager.
Yeah, the other common thing we work with is people dealing with being in a couple where there's a disparity. One person comes with quite a bit of wealth and the other doesn't. And dealing with prenup conversations really effectively and how they want to co-design their relationship and what they want to have as a we moving forward, separate from what each of them has brought to the relationship, so that both can really flourish and thrive together, as opposed to the typical dynamics that show up when we don't do things more deliberately and intentionally around that.
Mm-hmm.
Who
are your associates and partners in the Wealth Legacy Group? Because you're referring to we.
Oh, yeah, my business partner, her name is Jamie Traeger Muni, and she is a PhD psychologist with a specialty in wealth psychology. And she worked at Wells Fargo as an in-house wealth psychologist with their ultra-high net worth clients. I think they just changed the name of the session. It's now called Abbott Downing. And she was working directly with clients there and designed a program called Wealth, Worth, and Fulfillment for them. And then she and her husband decided to walk her talk. It was so amazing. She has this great job, very prestigious, really acknowledged, and her husband has been very passionate for a long time about the Middle East and the peace process and wanting to do what he can to support peace in that region. And he supported her and her dreams and everything she wanted to accomplish in her work. And she said, it's time for me to really step into using everything we've built as a couple and that we have in our lives and, you know, the wealth that we've created to support him in following his dream. And so in 2010, they moved to Israel. And she brought me on as a managing partner. So I'm managing the company in the States, and she's building the global presence.
Talk about the global presence and how that looks and fits into the mission of WLG.
Well, we both are really passionate about really supporting people and being free to really make a difference in the world in a way that they feel called to, and where their tangible and intangible assets, like all of the wealth. And I really want to speak about defining wealth, because so often when we have that conversation, we're talking about money and tangible assets, and we really focus as well on the intangible ones, you know, our relationships, our education, knowledge, wisdom, our networks, what Jay Hughes and other people in the industry that we work in call the human, intellectual, and social capital people have. And so, you know, here she is in Israel, and she's connecting with people from London all the way to South Africa, Singapore, Australia, Hong Kong. It's a very international conversation that's just beginning to open up there in terms of there's a lot of new wealth in Israel, and there's a lot of transitioning of wealth that's starting to happen, and dialogue's just beginning. So, like, just last week, she was in the first ever meeting of its kind in Israel with 20 professionals in the field of wealth and transition and mindful planning, getting together to look at how do we collaborate? How do we have best practices? How do we really serve as true fiduciaries for our clients? And she said it was fascinating because we've been steeped in that conversation in the States for years, and there it's so new that people are very hesitant, not sure, great idea, but they don't really know how to move with it. So she's getting a chance to really bring forward a lot of what we've learned here in the States and bring it into an international conversation.
How does it work in other countries, and how does the cultural component fit cause the conversations to vary around money, especially women and wealth?
Oh, gosh, I wish she was here. She would be so great.
We'll bring her on. We'll bring her on.
It's a great question. And I can tell you that one thing she encounters, like in Israel, the word stewardship isn't in the vocabulary. And there's a whole different language around philanthropy because it's a more of a socialistic government. So everybody's needs are taken care of in a sense. So it's like, why be philanthropic? And yet, it's because it's good and it's the right thing to do in many ways, and it helps us in our health and our well-being. And yet it's not the mindset of a country where, you know, there isn't that need. And so it's a very different approach. And yet, they're steeped in this huge conversation with a lot of need around the haves and have-nots and the tremendous pain around these different factions that are understanding and not relating well with each other. So.
Wow. So we'll have to have Jamie come back on with you.
Yeah.
that has to happen because Sylvia Global, a lot of our listeners, not only are they around the world, but they're high net worth women because this is the forum for their voice and their concerns and questions to be addressed. Because as you mentioned earlier, there aren't many places or, you know, to go and talk about it. And there is, depending on if a woman has inherited wealth versus earned wealth versus married wealth. You know, there's just a lot more complexity to it than meets the eyes, you know, and then what's normally brought to the forefront. How do women create legacies of wealth? You know, you made a comment about how every woman can and should create a legacy of wealth. Give us some examples of what you mean by that.
Oh, thanks for asking for that. And it's the other key component that the women that we work with care so much about, and it has to do with their children and also their essence and what they want to live on. And I want to say that I am so passionate about this, particularly because my mother died really suddenly when I was 14, and she was so young. She was 44. She didn't mindfully start to think about what's her legacy. And so I didn't have anything really deliberately, mindfully from her. You know, I just have like bits and pieces that I have to kind of call and remember. And my four-year-old brother, he doesn't have anything. And I became really passionate about, wow, again, how do we articulate this? How do we capture our values and our essence? And how do we support our children in really knowing what matters most to us so that it lives well beyond us? And what I came to understand is in this work is that we all have a legacy, whether we're doing it mindfully or not. And we can decide and be deliberate around how to articulate it and what really matters to us most of all. And when we work with people, they're like, well, you know, what do you mean my values or my legacy? One of the things we talk about is how, you know, when you do something like our Rich Life Portfolio and you get really grounded and clear in who you are in the world and what has shaped you and what's mattered to you from your past and what you want to bring into the future. You then start to look at your family, your children, your work, your philanthropic giving, your civic engagement very differently. And what happens when you deliberately and mindfully articulate your legacy, it guides decisions and actions you take in all of those different aspects of life. And it guides your advisors and your fiduciaries in terms of what they need to do so that the planning that you do for your tangible assets, your money, your wealth, your belongings, is in keeping with your values and that they're guided by those principles. And we as women have a huge role to play in that. Oftentimes we defer to the men in terms of the structures, and we need to make sure that the structures are guided by what really matters most to us and our families and our history, and has the future be informed by that.
Did you inherit wealth when your mother passed away? Is that was that another key occurrence for you?
You know, it's interesting. I looked at where my privilege and my wealth comes from in my family, and it is definitely in the intellectual capital and the human capital. And I'm really sad about the fact that, like, the tangible things I got from my mother were very happenstance. Like, for instance, I was in my dad's desk as an adult, like, I mean, maybe 10 years ago, and I was looking for some paper, and I found a jewelry box, and I opened it, and there was a beautiful gold braided chain with a gold clock pendant on it. Very special, very beautiful. I'd never seen it before. And I asked him about it, and he told me it was my mom. And I asked if I could have it. And then I looked at my dad and said, well, what's the story behind this? Did you give it to her? Was it? And he had no memory of it. And it was like, ah. Oh. And what we often forget is that something that was really meaningful for us and that there's a whole story and a memory about it doesn't stay with that object. once we're gone. And yet we can capture those stories for future generations. And so I have some key pieces that really mean a lot to me from her, and I don't have her story around them.
A lot of people can relate to that, even if they cannot relate to the, you know, the 25 million and plus. There's a way for us to connect with people we love that are no longer with us, that where there's value. And you're saying to be intentional in adding to that value. What drives people to you? Is it circumstances such as a medical crisis, a pending death, some life change that has caused someone to stop in their tracks and say, uh-oh, I need help, you know? how do customers and clients, I should say, how do they get to you, you know, and what brings them to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. A couple of different ways. It can be because of a life event, the birth of a child, and all of a sudden shifting to becoming into the role of a parent. Or perhaps one client of mine, she started to notice that she had a really strong work ethic, and then her husband had a really important liquidity event, and they ended up with a lot of money, and they're living really well. And she's noticing that her daughters were not, they were showing up spoiled, and she was really unsure about what to do. And she ended up working with me, and we work on a regular basis. As her children are growing and entering into different developmental stages, around how to instill really great values that matter a lot to both of her parents, the parents, to these two little girls, when they're not necessarily witnessing or observing the parents coming from those values. So how do you instill it in other ways? How do you embody it when you're not, quote unquote, working? And so that was the question that drove that client to us. And because of the background in child development and family dynamics, we're able to work with people throughout different stages of life. So things that we would apply when they were 5 and 7 are different than when they're 10 and 12, per se. And then when they turn teenagers, it's going to be a whole other level of work we're going to do. And also they're concerned about, well, how do we prepare them for the wealth that's coming down the pike that they're going to have to be pretty savvy and manage, and that we don't want them being taken advantage of. And so it's also beginning to set up understanding learning styles and how they go about learning and to build their comfort and competence around money, finances, and good and healthy decisions, and how to establish good, healthy relationships with advisors. So those are all different things that people really come to us around family issues. And then if they are going to get married, like if there is an engagement that's happened and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I was just told I have to have a prenup. What do I do? And then people who have received an inheritance that they weren't expecting, or people that have been receiving an inheritance and they are feeling a lot of pain around it and they're looking for help. Oh, and then my specialty in terms of the blended families.
Yeah, let's talk about the blended families.
If somebody has the yours, mine, and ours scenarios, and they're having a hard time with their estate planning, their advisors will contact us, recommend us, and say, you know, this is another great resource for you. So it looks like you're having trouble signing your documents or you're challenged by this decision. And then I'll work with them and really look at what is it that they want to accomplish with their estate plan, and build some really good communication, especially when they have very, very different views and where there's conflict of interest. That's a big one. So
the conflict of interest?
Mm-hmm. Within blended family systems, like what the stepmother and the stepchildren may want or see are really important or very different.
So regardless of the circumstances that might draw them to you, this does not sound at all like it's a one-time meeting and then the problem is resolved and they go on their merry way. It sounds like a relationship that's nurtured and sustained throughout the remaining of life. Or do you find that some of your clients are with you for specific purposes, you take them through to a specific desired outcome and that's it?
Oh, such a good question. And, you know, for some people, they have we have a decision we have to make and we need your help. And we'll do some intensive work together. Like one couple with a big step family issue related to their estate plan worked with me once a week for 4 months until we resolved it. And they got to a solution that really worked for them. And then we touch in periodically and check in and see how they're doing, but not anything sustained because they really got what they needed met. Then there's other people, like I said, with these young children where they want to just, I work with them once a month for just an hour a month, just like what's happening, checking in, and then we do a family retreat once a year or maybe every 5 years, whatever they decide that works for them. We do a foundational piece with our Rich Life portfolio because it's so helpful for people in the conversation, and then they know they can come back to us at any time, and there's this really rich grounding and foundational component that we hold and that they know that they have a lot of safety to come to.
You know, Emily, one of the purposes, one of the main missions of SylviaGlobal.com is to re-image what is commonly associated with the word wealth. You know, we have so many lopsided images thrown out into the world of what, you know, wealth gone bad, you know, and bad behavior associated with wealth. And, you know, two examples that come to mind that were always, have remained disturbing to me, but they serve as a sufficient catalyst to flip the coin in the conversation on this and the images associated with wealth, you know, like the Kardashians or Paris Hilton, you know, that there are so many people, and I think that type of negative image associated with wealth and riches, financial wealth and riches, is one of the reasons that when someone has wealth, especially those that have inherited wealth and don't know what to do with it, there's this shame or embarrassment because they may, otherwise their values may not be like the Kardashians or Paris Hilton, at least the way they're portrayed in the media at all, and they don't want to be viewed that way. But if that's the only image that people associate with rich and, you know, wealth, then keep it undercover. You know, you just go into hiding unless you have a confidant and a coach that you can confide in and be guided through to also help assess the values and the relationships beyond just the bank, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's so inspiring what you're doing. I'm thrilled to hear that. And there's a lot of pain around that. And it's one of the reasons why we have such this dichotomy, because there's such a strong emphasis in our culture to be defined by how much money you have.
Yes.
And the core essential component of our work is that whatever we can do to support people in being defined by their core passions and values, and then their wealth, and I mean all of their wealth, not just their money and their assets, but their networks, their relationships, their educational background, all of those different pieces, can then be accessed more effectively, more efficiently to support them as a resource towards what it is that they're here to do. And it's so interesting when that, there was a huge national lottery that was happening, and I was in Atlanta speaking on women and wealth at a women's conference, and I had so many people come up to me that weekend, people that worked in the hotel, and they would look at me and they'd say, what would you do if you had $500 million? And it was like this buzz in terms of opening up to the possibility of what can happen in life when we have access to that kind of capacity to move the world the way we want it to go with that kind of wealth. And at the same time, what people miss is a tremendous amount of pain and emotion, and it's like having a meteor land in your atmosphere. It's a metaphor I just heard from Jay Hughes coming up with a new book around what happens to the beneficiary when they receive money. And it is. It's like your life is never the same after that, and suddenly you're defined by it, and you don't know if you can trust the people around you and why they're in relationship with you. People change how they treat you and how they look at you, and you get really, it's very confusing. And there's, like we said, there's nowhere to go. And so that whole idea of changing what we think about when we think about wealth is huge. Thank you for talking about that.
Yeah, the expectations change, you know, and such. I have so many more questions to ask you, and we're close to needing to wrap this first conversation up.
Okay.
And you will, you know, we're scheduled to do a part two of this, so I'll be looking forward to that very soon. But one of the last questions I'd like to ask you is, have you had experience, or has the Wealth Legacy Group had many experiences working with people of wealth who have lost it and then recovered?
Oh, that's such a good question, and it really speaks to resilience, which is a really important conversation for us to have. We could have a whole other hour just on that. And oftentimes, when people aren't adequately prepared for the wealth that they receive, they will lose it within a very short period of time. And, you know, it's this whole consistent pattern. They talk about short sleeves to short sleeves in three generations. Somebody makes it, somebody sustains or tries to maintain it, and then the other generation spends it. You know, it's just this really interesting phenomenon that happens. And it can be changed. And it has a lot to do with having the conversations openly, as opposed to feeling that you can't because you can't trust them, and how to have those conversations so that people feel empowered, people are equipped, and they feel competent. And if somebody can have that resilience, they will be able to continue to have that money, grow it, and have it go in the world in very powerful directions. But I got to tell you, 70% of the time, it doesn't happen.
What happens?
There's infighting in the family because nobody was adequately prepared, and past resentments and hurts were never dealt with because of the need for control or to have things look a certain way. Keeps people from rocking the boat, bringing up things that really matter, not having the capacity to have the conversations, so that when at the time somebody dies and the wealth is transferred, you know, basically all heck breaks loose in the family system. Mm-hmm. And litigation happens, or there's people are taken advantage of because they're a bit naive.
It just gets downright ugly.
Yeah, unfortunately. And it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't have to be that way, yeah.
Committed to shifting that for people who want to have a different outcome.
You know, in closing, there's a quote that's attributed to Thomas Keita, "Don't believe everything you think." And I know that you and I, in talking earlier, that's one of your favorite quotes, along with Montgomery Gentry's song, "Some People Change." Let's close out by you sharing with us why, you know, the meaning and the significance of those two quotes and songs, because I think it applies to the discussion and reveals, you know, some additional insight to why you're the special guest being featured here on Sylvia Global.
Thank you so much. Don't believe everything you think. Just get people to stop for a minute. And we have these thoughts that run through our heads, and then we get taken sideways by them, and they are not true. They're just not true. They're a thought. And by being mindful about what we're choosing to believe and really questioning, just that simple question, huh, is that true, can really open up new possibilities in how we relate to the world, to our loved ones, to our money. And open, you know, I'm all about opening up possibilities. And that's the same with that song, "Some People Change." It really looks at, you know, we can be brought up in a very prejudicial home. We can be brought up with alcoholism, and with the right attitude, with the right support, with strong determination, and you can do things differently if you see that it doesn't really suit you or serve you to continue along that pattern. And that's what we're all about, is what can we do to assist you if that's something you want.
Emily Bouchard, co-author of the forthcoming book, Estate Planning for the Blended Family, and partner at Wealth Legacy Group. Our listeners can contact you at what website?
Oh, I think the easiest one is emilybouchard.com, because it has everything on it. And they can get the Blended Family resources and the Wealth Legacy Group resources. So it's just emilybouchard.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today here at Sylvia Global, Emily. We'll look forward to having you back soon, and we'll pick up the next conversation on the Rich Life Portfolio and Legacy Letters, also known as Ethical Wills. And let's throw in that next conversation, resilience. You know, what that means in earning and retaining, sustaining and growing financial legacies. Thank you so much for being our guest today here on Sylvia Global. This broadcast is available on iTunes as a podcast under Sylvia Global, and you will find us on Sylvia Global, hashtag Sylvia Global on Twitter and Facebook. We'll look forward to having you like us. Thank you very much for being with us today.